Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Literacy View. We have a really special episode today. This is our St. Patrick's Day special, and we got lucky. We got lucky because we have Amina McLean with us today, and I'm going to introduce Amina. Lots of people have followed her on Twitter, now called X. Her posts are dynamite. She's brilliant. And she wrote an article recently called "Has the Science of Reading Become a Rampant Thought-Terminating Cliché?" And let me give you a little background about Amina. Amina is an Australian language and literacy expert. She holds qualifications in speech pathology, adolescent counseling, youth mental health, public health, and education. And she is currently completing her PhD. Well, congratulations. She is a lecturer, researcher, primary English and literacy leader, instructional coach, professional learning provider, and education consultant. Amina works with systems, schools, leaders, and teachers to develop ambitious and rigorous assessment, curriculum, and instruction practices in English and literacy. And what attracted us to Amina's writing, not only was the article fabulous, but Amina does the work. And we have so much respect for people who are in the classroom, in schools, and her authentic writing comes through. So let's get right to it, Amina. Your article really had so many highlights, but I just want to start off with one of the first things that you said. And I'm just taking an excerpt out of it. And it says, there's no such thing as an SOR curriculum, resource, or set of instructional techniques. The question was a symptom of how terribly things have gone wrong in systems and schools. Here we go, Amina. How did we go wrong? That's my first question. How did this all go so wrong for something that was supposed to go so right?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I just want to start by saying thank you so much for having me. And I think I have as much respect for the two of you as well, who are grinding away in classrooms all the time and trying to share practical knowledge and also shine a light on the real practical implementations of a lot of the things everybody is talking about. Where did we go wrong? I think I wrote in the article that I once upon a time had a lot of hope about the term, the science of reading. And you probably wouldn't find a more staunch advocate for the science of reading lowercase and the evidence base that we have. But I think, the tipping point for me when I lost hope or started to think things were going wrong was it being a movement and more about kind of people and ideas and programs and approaches rather than us really thinking about what is the evidence base. This absolute rise in popularism did not match a rise in knowledge or practice. And I sort of saw people, and people do it to me too, and I get really uncomfortable with it, putting people up on pedestals and just blindly following. I see the buttons out.
Blindly following. It's the cheers. It's the cheers, not the BS button.
That's cheers. But, blindly following a movement or a person or an idea or a resource without practitioners on the ground really having deep knowledge about what this means. So for a long time, I think it's probably similar in the US, but in Australia, for a long time, it has not been about the evidence base or the science. And that's where I think at some point we went on two separate paths, the movement and the science. And I find it hard to think about how the two can come back together at this point.
Well, we just talked to Lynn Stone recently about an article that she had written about, a certain type of approach becoming a movement. And I think Judy and I, really were in agreement with you know, that aspect of what she was saying. And, you know, Culty is charged. You know, this whole idea of a movement is really problematic. So, Judy, I saw you nodding away, holding up your cheers button. What are some of your thoughts about what Amina just said?
Well, I think Amina's article is a home run. It was one of my favorite articles to read because it was a no BS article. So it really resonated with me. And I appreciate that you wrote it from a point that, you know, teachers could understand. And it really got to the point. My favorite points in your article, I think you mentioned pedagogy. I think that's an important piece. I think we have to focus a lot on training teachers in pedagogy. So no matter what curriculum or program hits you, you know what best practices look like and what you should not do. And I think that teachers haven't really gotten enough training. I think everybody wanted to rush through this, and knowledge cannot be rushed. We have to give teachers the right level of professional development to know how to teach kids to read. There's been such a push with all this knowledge building, and of course, knowledge building is very important, but also teaching kids how to read and lift the words off the page is very hard for kids. And it's also a process for teachers to understand what that means. You know, how to point to words, how to look at the words and learn how to decode them. If teachers don't have that knowledge in their toolkit, we're going to lose another generation of kids. And I think the other thing that you said, that there's a couple of things that really resonated with me. I think you mentioned the word granular. I think so many people are speaking in such general terms of what, you know, has to happen in our classrooms because they don't really work in the classrooms anymore, or they're just pushing an agenda or a program and their main goal is money and not, you know, helping kids. And when we're helping kids, it does have to get very granular. It has to become very specific. And I could use a real life example. You know, I was looking at data in my own building and I know that I still have a lot of work to do. First grade is a very tough grade. Kids need a lot of skills in that grade. And if you don't get granular, it's very hard to shift data. And I wrote a memo to my principal about here's some things that need to happen and here are some solutions. So it's not really like, you know, we implemented HMH or whatever program we implement, right? That's fine, but there's still a lot of work to do in teaching kids how to read. And if kids aren't having that practice and teachers aren't armed with that knowledge, we're going to run into big problems.
So Judy mentioned granular, all right? And that was a term you mentioned in the article, Amina. Instead of this meaningless term, as you said, SOR, putting an SOR label on just about everything, or SOL, you know, science of learning, or structured literacy, really doesn't matter. It's about slapping a term on something and not really understanding, well, what does that mean? And I'm going to use your words, Amina, from the article. You had said, you know, if somebody says, oh, we use an SOL approach, science of learning. And you wrote, well, what does that mean? In concrete terms, what exactly would you observe in these schools with respect to documentation, assessment, or teaching and learning practices that would mean they were an SOL school? And who decides? I love that. And who decides? Could you, you know, expand on that a little bit, talk a little bit about what you meant? Get a little granular with us.
Yeah. I think it's a really good question. I think it's the heart of the point I'm trying to make is that I'm in my own school, but I'm also across any given year, I'm in a lot of schools and I see a lot of schools that will say they're doing SOR or SOL. And it does not mean the same thing in every single school. In fact, I would say every single school has a different interpretation of it. Now, sometimes it might be that they've read an article on something like cognitive load theory, or they've read an article about the five keys to reading or something like that. And they'll just attach that or superimpose that and say, well, that's what we're doing. Now, I think, firstly, I do think terms can be useful if everybody agrees on what that means in practice. I think you're probably aware of Greg Ashman in Australia. Mm-hmm. You know, he's academic and school leader and podcaster and all sorts of things. And he's kind of the first person I've noticed in the last week write something that was disagreeing with me, but actually disagreeing with my arguments, as opposed to just being hysterical, which is most people have just gotten hysterical. He said to me, which I think is the whole point, the science of reading movement, if it makes you hysterical, if someone says, be careful about this, that's telling us this, I'm making the right point. But he said he was saying, I think that he agrees with what I think about the problems, but he thinks terms can be useful. Well, I think terms can be useful, but we do not have agreement about what these terms mean in a practical sense. So when I go into school, I work across education systems, everybody has a different idea about it. And the main thing for them is that we're a part of the movement. You know, you want to be in the group. Well, what does that mean? What are you doing? And as soon as you start having those conversations, people can't answer those questions. Now, by granular, I mean that even if you are doing your best to implement evidence-based practices in reading, there is so much more that you have to do to achieve really good outcomes for your students beyond the science of reading, right? So schools that succeed, schools that get the vast majority of students to reading at grade level or above grade level, yes, they'll be teaching all of the critical elements of reading, but they'll have really, relentless attention to aligning their assessment and instructional practices. And they'll be able to tell you, we use this assessment tool to measure this element of reading, and this is the process. You know, this
Faith,
is
can we give like 50 cheers to everything that Amina said?
I know, yeah, I just want to jump out of my seat.
He's literally speaking my love language, and I think granular replaces the F-bomb right now.
I know. Yeah. Give a cheer.
Okay, granular. I feel like we could turn that into a good song.
Amina, because you are on a roll, girl. I just want to hear everything you have to say. Go ahead.
Well, the problems that I see is that people can't justify, and this comes back to Lynn's point, which I think is a really good point, where Lynn says it's commercialization and it's a program. I actually don't mind programs because they save teachers a huge amount of time. If they're deliberately selected to say, well, I'm using this program as a teaching tool to teach X, Y, Z, right? Now, that's a really important distinction, rather than we're a blah school and we can't tell you why we're a blah school, and in 5 years we'll become another something else school. If you want sustainable change, you have to be able to justify why you've chosen particular tools or programs and can kind of point to the evidence that would back up that choice. So I see, you know, assessment curriculum alignment is not done well. Assessment choice is not done well. Program or teaching tool resource selection is not done well. Getting granular means you kind of have those really robust discussions in your school about, well, how much time will we actually spend on this particular element of reading and why? What does the lesson level instruction look like? What does the planning look like over a term or a semester? So my frustration with Science of Reading the Movement is driving it is a whole lot of experts who don't necessarily get that because they've never had to do it, right? Mm-hmm.
I have to stop you. Say that again one more time.
People driving the movement have not done the practice or have not done the implementation, or they haven't done it for a long time. And they are in this, I like to call it the armchair expert, where you're in this privileged position of disseminating knowledge, but you are not responsible for what happens with it once it comes out of your mouth. And I think that is part of why we are at where we're at, lots of people have been sharing all of this knowledge and just assuming that that's going to trickle all the way down and create expert practitioners and students with brilliant reading skills. If it was that easy, schools would have fixed this on their own years ago, right? It's not that simple. So granular means, for me, we can put the microscope on our assessment choice and our assessment practices. We can put the microscope on what our pedagogy looks like coming to life every day in every classroom in our school. We can justify what we've done with reference to the research, not to a program or a person or an ideology. I think that's probably the crux of it.
Can we hire you for the Secretary of Education of the United States? Come on, we need your money. We need you. We need you badly.
This flattering. I'm pretty sure that
is blowing my mind, because you say it so well. And that's exactly the issue. I don't know, Amina, if you caught our episode with Maureen Ruby. If you haven't, I would recommend that. It was amazing. And it's all about the idea that curriculum is different from program. What you're saying is you have to start with your vision of curriculum, and then a program could be helpful because it's a tool. Am I hearing that right?
That's right. And I saw your tweet about that, and I've bookmarked it because I'm really interested in that distinction. But you're probably in the same position as we are in Australia, where you have your, say, your Common Core state standards, or your district has standards. We have our, in Australia, it gets confusing because we call our equivalent of that curriculum, which it's not a curriculum, right? It's just a set of achievement standards. But even that doesn't help us to know what to teach. There's a lot of stuff you have to do in your own school. I think, you know, people, the powers that be in education, think, oh, we'll just give you this document and now you know exactly what to teach. Yeah. You have to, in every single school, have that conversation about how we're going to teach reading, how we're going to teach writing, what are all of the sub skills and elements that we have to document, specify in our own school, and what are the best tools and practices that are going to kind of get us there. And that's, you know, that's, you know, that as well as I do, that that's absent. And I do want to go back and listen to that, because I think it's a distinction. What I worry about is programs being popular, or people being popular, but then things come in and out of fashion, and then what happens? And you get this idea of change fatigue as well, like schools, oh, we adopted that program, it didn't work. Well, also, sometimes it's not the program, it's how much of it you're doing, or it's how you're rolling it out or whatever. I really worry, unless at a school level, we can say, well, we do X because Y, we do A because B, you don't get sustainable change. And that's the problem with the movement. The movement is just so far removed from any of those sorts of conversations. I don't even think they think about it. And I think they think that implementation, and I've had a bunch of these emails and messages this week, people say, we can fix implementation later. Don't worry. The main thing is that, you know, reading science is front of stage and we're talking about it. We're making progress. And my question, you know, there is, well, what is progress? What do you mean by progress? Are students improving at reading? Yes or no? If the answer is still no, I don't think the science of reading movement is doing what they think they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. In Australia, there's just increased angst and urgency and agitation. Educators feel like I have to act, so I'm just going to charge in and do something. Are we ready to do it? No. Do we collectively have the knowledge and skill and the, I would call it the infrastructure or the scaffolding in our school to be successful? No, but we'll charge ahead and hope for the best. And what I'm seeing in a lot of schools is, you know, it's sort of like the science of reading versus balanced literacy endless debate. I'm seeing stuff that's probably worse than what was in place in the first place, right? Comprehension scores in some schools are going down because there's all this focus on maybe word recognition. So it worries me. And I know a lot of people are unhappy that I've said something, but it's got to be said. It really does.
Well, you're being honest. You're being honest. Judy, you and I just had this conversation when we had our lovely brunch yesterday.
Yes, this is what we talked about at brunch.
Exactly.
You don't really like each other. You hang out a fair bit.
No, we only met each other four times. Yesterday was the fourth time we met in person.
Honestly. When's the first? And we only met in person for the very first time like a year ago once.
Really?
Yeah. We met at our birthday celebration. And then we met at a conference 2 days in a row.
And then brunch yesterday.
Yesterday we had brunch. And this is in 2 years, we only met each other four times.
But right, feel like we're family now.
And I was going to say, the synergy you have online would belie that. Yeah.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
So, so we were just talking about this, Amina. Everything you just said. And Judy was saying how, you know, we have this SOR now and this label, and everything is supposed to be science of reading. Yet she's seeing that kids are not reading as much as they were reading before.
All over. I mean, kids that I tutor everywhere and teachers that I talk to. And I'm also sensing teachers are really frustrated right now. They're extremely overwhelmed. Nobody's talking about that. All these programs have so many resources. And, you know, they don't know, you know, what's best, and they're having to make decisions on the fly. I think what's going to get easier is, you know, taking really good notes this year, what's working, what's not working, what shifted the needle, what didn't shift the needle, how did you budget your time? Did we give enough time for kids to have that application piece of reading, which is critical too? I think that, you know, creating a quality curriculum doesn't happen overnight, but those conversations should kind of be memorialized maybe on a Google Doc or some kind of, you know, thread that you are keeping with your administration and your buildings to say, hey, this worked really well, or this didn't work well, or these standards these kids are still really struggling with. Maybe we need to, you know, look at that more deeply. But I think one other thing that really struck me was how your article began. You said, I was running a workshop last week when I was asked, is the writing revolution SOR, right? And we know that some programs like SRSD have a lot more research behind them. By Karen Harris, Leslie Lord implements it, and so forth. But I think that the most interesting part of that sentence was when you said, now all this educated wanted from me was a yes or no response, which is worrying in itself. So, you know, I think people are just looking for these yes, no's. I think, you know, people could get misled right now. Maybe somebody's going to put an SOR sticker on a box or write that this is an SOR decodable text or something, but that doesn't mean that that's the magic bullet, right? It still takes knowledge of knowing what is a quality text. It still takes knowledge to know, you know, anybody could put a sticker on a box, right?
Yeah. How it all this fits together.
The stuff that's happening, I don't know if it's the same in the States, but the stuff that's happening in Australia, because it's now popular and there's a market, the stuff that's being kind of talked about in professional learning workshops, resources that are kind of being published and pushed, it comes back to that question that I posed in my article, who decides? What's the quality control here? You know, whenever I'm asked those questions, is this SOR, I always will sit and have a conversation with that person about why this is, really respectfully, and I did with this person, why this is not the right question. Right? What is it that you're actually wanting to know? Is this going to improve my practice? Is this going to improve my student outcomes? Okay, so instead, some better questions that we could be thinking about are this or this or this. It's a worry. I feel like, again, this is the problem with the movement. It's pushed this mandate, if you like, that you have to be doing this. So people feel like we have to be doing this. We don't know how to do it, and we don't know necessarily what it is, but we're just going to check as quickly as we can. Okay, tick the box. Someone said it was SOR. Great, that means I can do it. And so I'm really worried about that, where that's going, already where it's gotten us to, but where it will take us. That's the kind of level of decision making sometimes.
Amina, what do you think of these websites like Ed Reports and you know, Evidence for ESSA, and now there's a new one out with the curriculum project, and you know, it seems like a lot of districts, at least here in the States, look at those types of websites looking for someone to say, yes, we should get it, it gets the green, no, we shouldn't get it. I think they're all a bunch of, ready, Judy? That's what I think. I really do think it's a bunch of BS. And because who's doing this? Who's deciding? You know, how are they vetting? What's the vetting process? You watched our episode with Nate Joseph and Stacey Bain. You know, this is concerning. I really don't understand how exactly they're deciding, who is deciding, and are there conflicts of interest along the way? Because that's very troubling as well. What do you think, Amina?
Yeah, I think the context in Australia is a little bit different, but we do still have this idea that if we have these websites that people can go to, they can just all of a sudden just kind of know everything, or a decision is made for them. That in and of itself, I think, again, talks to us about this gap between maybe research expert and practice expert, that you think that you can kind of publish something on a website, and what we would expect that to achieve, I just don't know what. Like in Australia, we do that chronically, where it's like, oh, here's a one-page guide on the science of reading. Here's a two-page guide on something. What on earth is that going to do? Like, think about all of the things that have to be traced through from that point to students facing a teacher for that to be impactful. Like, it's just nonsensical, I think, the superficiality of it. But also the idea that I kind of disagree with kind of contracting out our thinking to other organizations. We want to be able to do that thinking in our school, right? It's part of the problem. I understand where they're coming from, that they want a place where schools can go and go, if you choose between these five knowledge-rich programs, or you choose between these five phonics programs, or you choose between these five writing pedagogies, you're probably going to set yourself up for success. There's two problems there. Schools don't have to do the thinking and build their knowledge and justify the why in their context. But also it sets up this false expectation that if we do this, we'll succeed. And we know that if you pick up a program or a curriculum, there's no guarantee that you will succeed. There is so much that you have to do to implement it. So one, we don't do enough thinking because we go to this font of knowledge. Two, we pick up something that's promising us success and we're not guaranteed success at all. So I think schools need to be aware of those risks. You know, I'd love to see websites and organizations that were like, hey, let's help you with implementation. Let's help build collective knowledge in your school or your system about how reading develops, the best bets for teaching. And then maybe we can think about tools or curricula to get you there once you're fully informed. But my worry is that schools are pressured right now. They go to these places, they pick something, they reflexively implement it. Maybe it's not even right for their teachers and their students, and they do it. And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. And then 5 years time, where are we? We don't know. It's a real risk, I think.
Well, you know what's going to happen. 5 years from now, they'll say, see that science of reading? What a bunch of junk. And there it goes, because it was never done properly. So Judy, do you think that Amina could be our no BS bestie? I do.
If I had an extra t-shirt, I would send her one right now.
Honestly, right to Australia, you know.
You're definitely amazing. You are saying everything I've been thinking about.
For both of us.
And, you know, it's true. You know, why not speak to the, you know, teachers on the team? You know, the data that's pouring into my building right now, I feel that data in my blood. There is such an urgency because data has a voice. Many schools are now implementing universal screeners. What fantastic tools are coming into our schools? That is so powerful. That's going to be more powerful than anybody telling me what to do, because data has a voice and we need to start recognizing what that data is telling us. Are we not spending enough time giving kids that reading application? Yeah. Do our kids not know how to decode CVC words? Are we going too fast with our scope and sequence? Do we have to, you know, potentially have stronger tier one instruction or a stronger MTSS protocol? Yeah. Are we not challenging our kids that are doing great and are ready for, you know, the bigger and better things and go deeper into that knowledge? I think we're underutilizing what counts most, which is data. We're underutilizing the voice of the teachers in the building. They're stressed right now everywhere. Teachers are messaging Faith and I. And you know what? I have to give a shout out to many balanced literacy people. Everybody knows that I was formerly trained in reading recovery. I am so proud of that community, not the ones you see on social media saying nonsense, the really lifelong learners similar to myself that are saying, you know what? Many things we did in the past were great. Many things weren't. And they're making shifts. So kudos to those reading recovery people that are making shifts. Kudos to many balanced literacy people that are now watching our program and, you know, having those discussions, because I think for a long time, everybody was in their own silo. It was like an echo chamber. We're the SOR people. We're versus the balanced literacy people. No, we're all people. And the people that are in this for the right reason are thinking, what could we do differently to change outcomes for students?
You better believe it. Right on, Judy.
That's actually so important. I think There are so many things that you've said in there that are pure gold. I think that idea of these warring communities, and I've had a heap of emails and messages this week to say, Amina, you don't realize how much you're setting the movement back. You're letting the balanced literacy people win. And
that
I've just
said,
this is the problem. You're either in or you're out. Whereas I work in schools and systems all of the time that are not SOR, and we're all working together. Yeah, maybe people have been trained in more balanced literacy ways of thinking, or whole literacy ways of thinking, or science of reading ways of thinking, but we come together and we say, what do we know? What are our best of reading instruction? How do we plan for that? How do we teach that? How do we assess that? Now, if I went in with my, you know, bulldozer and said, this is the way, we're science of reading, we would never have that collaborative working opportunity, right? And this is the problem with science of reading, the movement, not the science itself, is you're either in or out. If you're balanced literacy, you don't belong here. If you're whole language, you don't belong here. So that collaboration is critical. The other thing you mentioned was data. And I am so pleased to see schools and systems adopting better assessment tools. But again, do we actually understand what these tools offer us, and what are we doing with them? Because the science of reading movement has said, get rid of leveled assessments, get rid of that and do this instead. Get rid of leveled text and do this instead. But no one is supporting anyone to know, well, why are we doing that? What does it offer us? How do we respond to that data? This assessment tool or this subtest, how does that link to this part of the curriculum versus this part of the curriculum? How are we then reporting on that? How are we tracking progress? And it kills me. I see it in Australia all the time. Well, if we're not doing F&P, which assessment? Oh, just do this assessment, as if that's an easy thing to adopt in a school, to de-implement one way of assessing that we've been doing for 20 years and just quickly pop in another tool and everything's okay, right? That's the level. That's as far as the movement will take you. Now, you know how hard that is to do on the ground, to change your assessment practices. And then you've got schools where all of a sudden, you know, you've got better assessment tools, but you don't change your curriculum. So you're assessing things you're not teaching, and you're teaching things you're not assessing. Again, the science of reading movement doesn't get that, right? So you're actually setting schools up to feel like they're doing things worse, right? Because all of a sudden I'm assessing word level reading and oral reading fluency, but we're not teaching that at my school. My data's terrible. My data's not shifting. Am I a bad teacher? No, actually, you just don't have assessment curriculum alignment.
Amina, a lot of teachers are feeling that way right now. They feel defeated. And, yeah, you know, a lot of teachers feel powerless because sometimes they don't have all the power. You know, they're listening to this one and that one, and they feel stressed out. And I got to say, when you were talking, Amina, I think I became a mushball. I mean, my eyes were filling with tears. It's like, I'm so happy that somebody hears what I've been trying and Faith has been trying to say for so long.
Yeah. And like a voice of reason, like listening to you, and just this idea about, we've talked about this, Judy, the club, that's what we call it. You're in the club, you're out of the club. You're a club member here. And if you raise any questions, there are certain Facebook groups that will not allow our podcast even in the group because it goes against the club thinking. You know, I kid you not. It's like this club mentality.
It doesn't surprise me. The number of messages, I mean, I've had overwhelming support but for what I've written. And I think because it cuts through the camps, and more broadly, there's this sensible middle that say, yeah, this is kind of making sense. But the messages that I've had this week just really, really speak to that of like, don't you believe in science anymore? Are you wanting to, you know, support the balanced literacy movement? And I just said, it's because of how deeply I respect reading scientists and reading scientists of the reading science and reading scientists, but also practitioners on the ground, because that was the other argument. You're directly attacking teachers and schools and telling them they're doing it wrong. And I said, that's not it. You've missed the point. That's not it. It's because I care about them so much that I want to get this right and just cut through, as you would say, the BS, right, to get that granular.
I think we both read it that way. So, Amina, you wrote here, and I put BAM right by this. There's so many BAMs, but I wrote BAM.
You have a circle for that?
I do. I circled it. And you wrote, those who provide professional learning to educators in schools or advice to systems without giving concrete, actionable, impactful whys and hows are complicit in botched research translation. Whoa. That was just bam. Like I just was jumping out of my seat when I read that, because that just nails it. Everything we've been talking about, that just nails it right there. Could you finish up, Amina, with your 4 points that you wanted people to kind of change the conversation about, framing the conversation around these 4 points? Let me just remind you what those are, and then maybe you could talk about it. You said, select and sequence elements of our reading curriculum. Select and utilize assessment tools across the elements of reading. Allocate time to the various elements of reading and teach the various elements of reading. Could you kind of talk about that to sum up what your article is?
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, the reason I had those frames is because that's what has worked in my own school, and that's what works in the schools and the systems that I work with. It's about empowering schools, really. That's what it's about, that you have all of the best available information and you understand it, you collectively understand it, and then you can make choices that are right for your school and your teachers and your students. But it's also about taking it beyond, like you say, people who are just disseminating surface level science reading information. If people stopped providing that PL tomorrow, I think we would be okay. There is so much information out there. You can Google and find anything that you like. Whether or not it's accurate, that's another thing. But you can find this information if you're seeking it out. It's about doing the work to get that level of information to schools, teaching them about how you would actually build a reading curriculum, what needs to be there, what's the overall presence and prominence of all of the elements of instruction. Should we spend 2 hours a day on oral reading fluency? No. Should we spend 2 hours a day on phonics? No. How much time should we spend on reading comprehension and vocabulary and language building? Okay, let's build a curriculum that reflects that. Okay, so we've got this curriculum. Here are the available assessment tools that would align to that. So let's make the connections. We don't want to over-assess. So what's the bare minimum that we could do so we're getting enough data to be responsive educators, but we're not doing too much assessment, so that's taking away from valuable instructional time. What would the overall balance be in your school? Great, let's get there. So let's figure out what our timetable is. Great, let's look at what, you know, a literacy block would look like in the early years versus the middle years versus the upper years. So it's that information. I would like those 4 points that I kind of listed. The dream would be if we knew that we were doing a great job with disseminating research and really following that research to practice pipeline through, schools would be able to have those conversations and make good choices. But to get there, that requires all of the experts, all of the academics to be able to build professional learning courses, resources, guidelines that get that granular. And no one at the moment is prepared to do that.
I would like you to meet our friend, Dr. Maureen Ruby.
Yeah.
I think you two would just hit it off. And I think you would be talking to her for hours, honestly. She is actually working on something just like that now for the state of Connecticut.
Yeah, right.
And, I just spoke to her recently and I should get more information about that in April. And hopefully Judy and I will talk with Maureen. But Judy, listening to what Amina said, if something like that was the thinking, the conversation, it really wouldn't matter what the program is. What are your thoughts about that?
I said it on another episode, and I think it was kind of controversial, but, you know, one of the schools that I coached in, I think maybe a year or two ago, was a school that was actually still using unit of studies. It's not my current school. But then we made shifts. We implemented, foundations with Fidelity. We also, when we were using the unit of studies, we shifted 100% from looking at pictures and using decodable text. And, you know, I was training my teachers to know what it means to teach kids to decode. And yes, that wasn't ideal, right? It definitely wasn't ideal, but that's what I had to work with. And that's what the teachers had to work with at that time. And guess what? We still made shifts. Now, could we have made more shifts with a different program? Probably yes. But my point is, whatever we have to work with, if we have that knowledge, we can make better things happen. I had a question for Amina. Amina, so now it seems to be a big push for states in our area or in our country to list programs that are okay to use and programs that are not okay to use. And from what I'm seeing, some of the programs that have the strongest research aren't the programs that are making the cut. What are your feelings about mandating specific programs by name in order for schools to select from or states to select from?
Yeah. My question is, what are they trying to achieve by doing that? I think it makes a lot of assumptions. Well, yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of assumptions. I mean, yeah, I can see, I work with a lot of systems, so I know how they think about these things, and they think, well, if we just tell schools, you know, five things that will be okay, you know, at least we're kind of narrowing the focus and maybe we can control the quality of curriculum choice in schools. Again, it assumes a lot, right? It assumes that schools are going to go to the website. It assumes that schools are going to pick one of those five programs, even if it's mandated. I mean, what does a mandate mean? How many, I don't know what it's like in the US. In Australia, we can pretty much do whatever we want in our schools. Like, no one's coming to check, are you teaching this program? Are you doing this? Are you doing this? And to be honest, there's no one in the system that would have any sense of what expertise would be anyway, what they're looking for, what success would be. They're just like, are you using it? Tick. And people say, yeah, we're using it, tick. So I can see both sides. I like you share concern if what's being recommended is not necessarily most consistent with the evidence base. And sadly, that often links to partnerships they might have. There might be a particular program that has a strong evidence base, but they feel like the overall reputation of that program, it's not going to have enough legs to really be popular. So they make all sorts of arbitrary choices like, oh, you know, those publishers are a bit on the nose and we don't think we'll get wide scale adoption. Or, you know, let's restrict it to this. Or, you know, yeah, there's the commercial aspect of course. We're both very aware of that. So how those decisions are made really depends on who's advising the government, the preferences of the person who's advising the government, and then the government's broader agenda. And they're not always, you know, as right. pure as we'd like them to be.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what's happening here, where we're getting different mandated programs, you know, in different states. People are wondering how these decisions were made. I mentioned these websites that people are now looking to these websites for answers. And we have programs, and we discussed this on the Literacy View, again, with Nate and Stacy. We used an article. We're going to be, you know, talking more about that. But basically what we're seeing is that, you know, from one program to the next, they're knowledge building programs, but is there really a major difference from one program to the next? It's really about what you do with a program and how it's implemented.
I mean, there must be evidence about some of these programs. I think, you know, that some schools.
I'm not saying there's not evidence yeah. behind it. What I'm saying is yeah. that, you know, there
might not be, though.
Well, there may or may not, but that's not even the point here. The point is that if we don't look at the programs and talk about what Amina's talking about, actually, what is it we're trying to achieve, then what's, you know, what's the difference from one program to the next? Could you talk a little bit about that, Amina, please?
Yeah, I have an unpopular opinion here.
Oh, it'll probably be popular
I think sometimes the measures of effect of these curricula that are available en masse, what they do when they evaluate its effect is they compare it to business as usual in schools. So schools are doing whatever they're doing, but these schools are doing our curriculum. And doing our curriculum, these students do better. Now, here's my unpopular opinion is We can drastically shift things for students just by specifying a curriculum. A lot of schools don't do that, right? So, for example, if we narrow it to word recognition, just by having a phonics scope and sequence that you follow, your students are going to do better. It doesn't matter if it's scope and sequence A or B or C or D or E. It doesn't matter. My view is they're much of a muchness. It's whether or not it's in place. It's the same with knowledge building. Do we, and you can purchase a curriculum, adopt a free curriculum, or build your own. What matters is, are students reading challenging texts every day, learning vocabulary, having rich discussion, having opportunity to apply strategies, having some linked writing instruction, and that is specified in your school. We will read these texts. We will learn about these topics. We will learn this vocab. We will do this aligned writing instruction. So the research that supports a curriculum program is telling you that doing this and specifying learning in this way is better than not specifying learning at all. Well, duh, of course that's going to be better. It doesn't mean that this curriculum is the best in the world. Now, I love to see it. I'm a big fan of knowledge-rich approach, really challenging text, build knowledge, build vocab. You know, we do that in my school. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what we've had to do with curricula like that to make it work in our setting, it's not necessarily what we downloaded or adopted, right? There's some really interesting research that's being done out of Harvard. James Kim and colleagues are doing this stuff where you might have seen a paper came out last week or the week before where they're looking at a knowledge-rich science curriculum. And they've built this science curriculum. But what they've done is specify the knowledge, but also support teachers to have what, you know, I would call a dialogic pedagogy, where you know when to stop, you know when to ask challenging questions, you know how to push students and cause thinking, and you've constantly got this back and forth between teacher and student. And they've found, yeah, students build science knowledge, but you build reading comprehension, and that transfers to other subjects like English language arts and maths, and you see this progress sustained over 12 months or more. Now, you could say that they're evaluating that particular curriculum that they have designed, and that is correct. But they're also evaluating the value in getting granular, right? That's what it is.
Right.
What will we teach? When will we teach it? And how will we teach it? And every single school in the world could do that in their own school and be successful if we had that lens. So It's great that we've got these tools available, but I think sometimes the effect that we're measuring is that compared to nothing. No one's really comparing, say, 5 knowledge-rich curricula and saying which one is truly the best, right? No one's really doing that research. They're saying, does a knowledge-rich curricula get better reading or writing outcomes than schools doing their own thing? So I always kind of try and bring it back to that. I hope I've represented the work of Kim and colleagues accurately. I think that's right, but you can find the paper they've tweeted out recently.
Could you send it to me? I didn't see it. I'm not familiar with what you're talking about now. So yeah. I probably missed that. If you could send that to me, I would love to read it.
Yeah. So. It's the same with other, like, you know, phonics programs or other programs. Often they're compared to business as usual, and business as usual don't have a scope and sequence. They don't have a set lesson structure for phonics. So it's not necessarily saying this program is outstanding, but it's good to know that if I use this program and do all of these various things in my school, have my own internal checks and balances, I'm pretty much guaranteed good results. But it's not necessarily the program doing that. It's the person leading implementation and ongoing maintenance and fidelity in the school. And you know what that takes. I know what that takes, being that person in a school to make sure the teaching actually happens the way you want it to happen, the delivery and the pacing and the sequencing actually happens the way you want it to happen. We respond to the data. We have interventions, you know. So there's, I don't know. I sort of think we can go too far down. That's the danger of having a little bit of data literacy, is you go, well, research shows that this curriculum does good things, so we'll do this curriculum. Okay, are you going to do it in exactly the same way as they did it or intended when they created it? Or what would successful implementation look like in your school?
I can't ask anything else. Honestly, you are just a home run in everything you're saying. So I don't know who would get mad at you, but I know it's not me.
You know what? I have something to say.
I'm getting an Amina shirt because I'm like, honestly, I'm like one of your biggest fans.
Hey, you know what she is? So she's from Australia, but she's like a four-leaf clover to me. For hours. Really is. I am
in the
so
green.
Lucky to have this conversation. You've made me feel optimistic because right now, like I said, you know, it's a little crazy in the schools. It's really hard. And there's so many things to think about, and people have to move away from thinking there's this magic bullet. I have to be honest, and this is controversial. Dun, dun, dun. You ready? a truth bomb. I saw more reading in the classrooms before. Right now, during the balanced literacy days, kids actually held books a lot. And yes, we know guided reading is not the right approach, but at least I saw a lot of small group instruction and kids reading books and, you know, moving their finger. And I hope, you know, if we have the knowledge, we know kids, you know, strengthen this core tier one instruction, but kids still need to read. Kids still need attention to read. Kids should still be immersed in books and read for different purposes. Those read alouds. I want to see just as much of that in those classrooms.
Yeah, and that's the balance is wrong, isn't it, at the moment? The balance and the movement has caused that because it just zoomed in on, you know, that narrative of how we're teaching word recognition.
Yes, yes. Amina, I just want to thank you for taking your day off. It is like Labor Day in Australia today.
Oh, wow.
And Amina took the time to spend with us, and we couldn't appreciate this conversation anymore. It was just wonderful. And just thank you. I hope we can have you on again and you'll be our no BS bestie because we just love speaking with you. Thank you so much.
That's my pleasure. It's been great spending this time with you. Thanks, and thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you. Judy, you want to give last words? Go ahead.
All right. So follow us on our website. The new website is up and running. Our live Twitter feed is on there as well. It's theliteracyview.com. Follow us on our favorite platforms, Instagram, The Literacy View. Follow us on, join our Facebook group, The Literacy View. Real Teachers Letting Loose, The Literacy View. Our group is growing. Message us. You could also message us on our website now. We're getting a lot of people emailing us, you know, sharing their thoughts. Keep on doing it. And we want to stay in contact and share and subscribe everywhere. Write us some good reviews, and we love you.
And happy St. Patrick's Day. All right. Thank you.